Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome to the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Once again, here with the full crew. And I guess my co-host, who's also the host of another show, who sometimes thinks he's hosting this show while he's hosting his other show. What's going on, QB1?
What's going on, man? You know, sometimes you just get things mixed up, but it's all right. We made an audible, and now we're back to our original play, so let's do
yes.
it.
Yes, sir. Back to the flagship. And, you know, your partner in crime on the Climbing the Big Board podcast, Miles Gorham. What's going on, my man?
You know, same old, same old.
All right. And certainly, last but not least, we got the Sexy Prince, QB2. I feel like we skipped over some content the last time we were all together because you had a game and you had to go out there with without your wide receiver one. And perform. Sexy Prince, how you doing, and how did things go at that last game?
Not great. Wide receiver one was missed. The offense was very similar to how the Vikings offense has looked over the past couple weeks. Without their number one, number two can't do nearly as much. QB2 got banged up a little bit. Quite a bit of big of a cut on my lip, so having to talk and eat through that is very painful.
That is unfortunate. And I mean, I know, I feel like you're holding out a little bit. You know, what did the stats look like without wide receiver one?
Stats weren't bad. Didn't throw any picks. We had about two touchdowns. We were actually going blow for blow. It was kind of like a more of a defensive fight. We still took the L. But yeah, I think if we had a little bit more offensive production early on, we probably would have gotten the W. But no, it was a good game.
And then I guess the most important question is Miles, hearing how vital you are to the operation, what kind of contract are you holding out for, man?
Just one where I could don't piss my wife off.
Oh boy. I mean, that's the most important contract you have right
there. I'm just playing. No, it's just been busy, so I want to get back out there. But if this weather's about to turn where they're saying it's supposed to snow and stuff, then I'm out, Prince. I've played in snow. I've played in turf. I'm not doing that for free.
Brand.
So, Prince, you basically got Joe Flacco'd, in other words.
Fact.
Say again.
You got Joe Flacco, in other words.
I definitely got Joe Flacco. Man, it was rough out there. People weren't picking up blitzes. It wasn't a bad game. It was just kind of like, hey, we could have won this game and we didn't. So,
you know. Okay. Well, even that feels like an improvement from earlier on in the season. And I know we've kind of skipped over this for the last couple episodes, but Prince, we back in here, man. What is the question of the day?
What's the question? So we were kind of talking about this, and anybody who grew up in the 90s, really, it was the 90s era, the kind of like the BET, MTV, when, you know, hip-hop was, it was already big, but, you know, something that was really important to hip-hop was you would get the first initial track, the music video, all that stuff. And then the most exciting part of that song is you always waited for the remix. The remix was so hot. It was so fire. You would add on, you know, two or three more singers or rappers or whatever the case is. Looking back, what is you guys' favorite remix that you heard? This one's more recent for me. I don't think it's not my favorite, but it's the one that
What's the question?
What was like your favorite song, like I guess hip hop song or something that, you know, that got remixed and you know, was fired to you? I'm gonna go with it's kind of newer, but I'm gonna go with I'm So Hood. You know, I had Birdman, Busta Rhymes, Fat Joe was in it, you know, Diddy, Lil Jon. It had a bunch of guys on it. So when they remixed it, I was pretty excited, especially when they came out with the music video. So that's mine.
All right, QB1, what you got, man?
This is a tough question for me. I got a lot of original songs that I like. I don't know. Come back to me. Give me a couple seconds to think.
All right, we'll keep it moving then. Miles, what you got, man? What's your favorite remix? What's the one that's coming to your head right now?
You ever heard of R. Kelly's Slow Wind remix?
I mean, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if we're supposed to be promoting R. Kelly on this pod. It's a family friendly podcast, but you know.
you asked for the first one that came to my head, and that was the one. So
okay. JR, you come up with anything yet?
This might be a little too southern for some of y'all. Shawty Low, They Know. That was
I didn't hear it.
That was like the greatest remix ever.
That remix was fire.
It was fire. Rest in peace to Shawty Low. Was a great artist.
Your next question is
a great remix.
Did that make it up to Minnesota?
Who is it? I missed it.
Shawty Low.
Oh my gosh, Shawty Low.
They know. Yeah, it did.
Oh, okay, just making sure. Just had to make sure.
And I think myself. Oh, go ahead, Miles.
Like the internet doesn't hit up here.
Oh no! See, I don't know what you said right there, but it feels like you are on Prince's Wi-Fi this evening.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
He said it's crazy because I mean the internet does get up in Minnesota. So
okay, yeah, I guess that does work. For me, I'm gonna go with the Annie Up remix. So M.O.P. featuring Busta Rhymes, Remy Ma. That was a banger for me back in the day.
Busta Rhymes was on like every remix.
Pretty much everyone's remix around that time. Busta Rhymes had to get up on there, but that was a good one. Let's get this thing moving because we got a lot to cover. We don't have too much time before we got our guest in here. So, I mean, it's a little tough. We got the Vikings, we got the Browns. I guess really the most intriguing thing about the game right now is the fact that they're playing it in London, England. So, JR, start with you. Give us your thoughts. What should we be looking for? Why should anyone who's not a Vikings or Browns fan watch this game? And I guess what are the big things? What are your keys in terms of what you're going to be looking at when you watch this game on Sunday morning?
I think it is an intriguing matchup from a personnel standpoint because I really like the Browns' defense. I love their front seven. They have a lot of young, good pieces, especially up front. Obviously, Myles Garrett didn't make the trip to London, but besides him, they do have a lot of nice pieces up front. You talk about Danny Shelton, who was a first-round pick, Jamie Collins, who was a great player that they got from the Patriots. Christian Kirksey is an unknown player that they have or underrated player that they have that isn't really, you know, known around the fan circle, so to speak, but he's a very good player for them. Emmanuel Ogba is a good player for him, and a lot of young guys have stepped up for him as well. Larry Ogunjobi, who was a third-round pick for him, I believe it was. He's done a really good job this season. So they really have some really good young pieces on the defensive side of the ball. They have a lot of questions on the offensive side of the ball. Not really good receivers. We know Corey Coleman is a notable name, but we know he's been hurt. Kenny Britt is Kenny Britt at this point. He seems like he doesn't have much interest in playing right now from the quotes that he was saying. David Njoku is a nice young tight end that they have, and Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell is a nice tandem in the backfield. But we all know the circus has revolved around the quarterback situation with Kaiser, Hogan, and Cody Kessler. It's just been musical chairs at this point. But, you know, from a game plan standpoint, I think this is a really good opportunity for Case Keenum to get back on track in the passing game because they like to keep a lot of too high safety looks. And they play their safeties extremely deep. And that leaves the short to intermediate areas of the field really wide open because what they're trying to do is Greg Williams is trying to keep everything in front of him. And he's just trying to keep everything in front of the safeties because he's very fearful of teams just throwing the ball over their head. So, and that's been another good reason why their run defense has been really good because you know, they just try to keep everything in front of them. So with that being said, I think this is an opportunity for them to take advantage in the passing game in the short and intermediate areas, especially with Thielen on the roll right now and Stephon Diggs being back.
All right. Well, like listening to JR, it actually sounds like there are some reasons for people to watch this game. Miles, how about you, man? What are you going to be looking at? And what are your keys as you, I guess, think about this matchup between the Vikings and the Browns on Sunday?
I just want to basically just see if the offense can kind of put, you know, put a whole game together where they're consistently, you know, performing on third down in the red zone. I'd like to see some more offensive touchdowns. I know the offense has struggled a little bit the last few weeks in the red zone in terms of scoring touchdowns. So I'd like to see them convert a little bit more on that. You know, maybe, I hate saying this, but maybe having Diggs back will help that out.
Yep.
I'd like to see Adam Thielen get in the end zone. I know has the most receptions in the league and the most yards without a touchdown in terms of receiving in the NFL. So I'd like to see him get in the end zone. Like JR said, the Cleveland Browns defense is very intriguing. They've got a lot of upcoming potential, and they're playing at a pretty high level right now, the way they were able to, you know, get after the Tennessee Titans last week. I think that could be a tough matchup for the Vikings, but overall, I just want to see the Vikings click on offense and click on, you know, both sides go, and then kind of just get out of the game. You know, obviously make sure you win the game, but I'd like to see them get out of it healthy too. So no matter what happens, I just want to see them get it, you know, get out of that game healthy. And I would love to be able to see if, you know, maybe if they do activate Teddy Bridgewater, you know, in the next day or two or whatever that is, if they do activate him and the game's a blowout or something, I'd love to see Teddy get in the game just to, you know, kind of get his feet wet. Other than that, I can't not talk about my guy, Rashard Hollywood Higgins. I obviously JR didn't mention him, which is kind of a slight, so I'm gonna take that personally. No, I like him though. I think he's a solid player, and I just I kind of hope he gets an opportunity. I know it'll be tough against the Vikings pass defense, but I'm a big fan of his.
All right, and moving right along, Saxy Prince, what are you going to be looking at? What are you going to be watching when the Vikings meet the Browns in London?
Meet the Browns. It's the good Madea movie. Anyways, I think the Browns, like JR hit on, their front seven is definitely something that's going to, I think, present some challenges to the Vikings. I've liked what this offensive line has been able to do. I kind of want to see them continue to take further steps forward. Nick Easton might be back, so, you know, he probably would step back in. If not, I think it's definitely good to see some more of, maybe potentially see more of Isadora. Miles was saying as well, I agree. I do want to see us get into the end zone. This should be a kind of a game where we can blow teams out, or blow the Browns out, I should say. And we haven't really done that so far this season. We've had, you know, we've had a lot of grinders, and then, yeah, we go up by a touchdown and stuff, and we kind of hold on, but we've never really had that statement game. So I think this would be a really good opportunity to do that against the Browns, who, yeah, they're 0-7, but they could very well, you know, be, you know, 3-4, 4-3, whatever the case is. I think this will be definitely a game where you might be able to go up early and get your starters out of there on the defensive side. That's actually who I'm more worried about as far as injuries and whatnot. Yeah, just make it out of that game with, you know, a nice lead, and, you know, and make sure you, I don't know, just make a statement. And that's what I'm looking for in this game, is for, you know, individuals who maybe need to step up for them to make a statement as well.
I mean, is it really a statement game if you make the statement against the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, I mean, you still can make a statement in terms of, you know, again, there are some games that, you know, should have been a little bit, like, I don't think the Ravens game should have been a close game. I don't think the Packers game should have been the close game after Rodgers went out. I don't think, you know, even the Bears game, obviously in the first half, that could have been, you could have run away with that. So, you know, the Browns are still an NFL team in which, you know, I don't expect us to go up 50-0, but, you know, I do want to win at least by two scores, you know, and then I think that's very possible for this game. So, statement in terms of this team is actually a very, very good team, so I want us to put forth that rather than playing down to where the Cleveland Browns probably are right now.
Okay, and that makes a lot of sense. And you brought something up, and Miles kind of hinted at something as well. And I mean, it's the elephant in the room. It's the thing that, you know, we have to talk about a little bit because, you know, there are rumors floating through the Vikings Twitter sphere that, you know, Teddy might get activated or, you know, Sendejo is suspended. So maybe they just slide Teddy in to take his spot for this game. I'm, you know, searching around on Vikings.com. You see Teddy, you know, doing handoffs to Jerick McKinnon. You know, obviously, you know, the conspiracy theorists out here and, you know, ourselves included start trying to piece things together and figure out, you know, what that might mean. Miles has had an ongoing working theory for a while now that, you know, that Cleveland game or this Cleveland game might be a place that makes some sense to try to get Teddy some run, get him in there and, you know, let him maybe work out some of the rust against, you know, this Browns team that is struggling in an environment with a little bit less, you know, pressure than coming in and starting off at the beginning of a game after such a long layoff. So, you know, Miles, this really is your take. I want to kick it to you first to, I guess, you know, give us your odds on this actually happening and then really your thought process on why after such a long layoff the team would, you know, throw Teddy out there in a game in these kind of circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, I just think I've always been a proponent, at least, you know, with Teddy coming off the pup that I think he should get through the bye just because I know, you know, the more practice reps and the more opportunity he can get to, you know, to be with his teammates and kind of build some of that chemistry back up and be on the practice field with them is important. But this Cleveland game heading into the bye, I know the plan, at least from the sounds of it, the plan is for Teddy to start, you know, potentially being the full-time starter come after the bye, whether it's in Washington right out the bye or back home against the Rams. So, you know, if he's ready to go physically and mentally, and they feel he's okay and they feel like, you know, they get the game, you know, hypothetically under wraps, you know, by the third quarter or even, you know, partway through the fourth. I don't see why you wouldn't want to get him, you know, give him a few opportunities, even, you know, a couple drives, you know, a couple series. And just to kind of let him get his feet wet, let him, you know, experience, you know, the game again, kind of like in a sense, like a preseason game for him because he didn't get a chance to play in the preseason this year. I think it'd be really good for him to be able to play in like a live game without having to be the main, you know, without having to really worry about, you know, needing to win the game, needing to, you know, do anything. He could just go out there and just kind of play and get that feel back and get the feeling, you know, get that, you know, his confidence back. So that's just kind of where I stand with it.
And JR, I'll flip it to you because I know that kind of before we really got into the season, you were kind of on the side of things of, you know, not much upside for Teddy coming in, you know, and playing the season, kind of wanted to slow roll, take the conservative route, let him get fully healthy and then kind of see how things shook out going into, you know, to next year. Obviously, the circumstances have changed. You know, Teddy's off pup. Sam Bradford is injured. We're not really getting many updates on what's going on there. So, you know, what are your thoughts on Miles' take that, you know, maybe Teddy should get some run in this game to kind of get his feet back under him, see what happens in the bye, and then, you know, kind of use the game, the tape that you get from the game and potentially how he recovers as a way to maybe gauge what you do for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I completely agree with every point that Miles made. I think if they do distance themselves from the Browns and the game gets out of hand, I think they should put Teddy in there. Because I think they should treat this game like a preseason game for him. Even if that's him only getting, you know, two series or three series, they have to see what he can do. They can't just, you know, select a random game and start him, in my opinion. I mean, they can. I won't say that. They can do that. But I think at some point they just have to put him out there and see what he can do. And I think this will be a perfect opportunity for him to do that. But that's depending on the score of the game. If the Vikings are able to distance themselves on the scoreboard from the Browns, I think this would be a good opportunity to put Teddy in there and treat this game like a preseason game. And he has the bye week to heal and learn. And also during the bye week, they can evaluate Teddy and decide what to go with from here on.
All right, that definitely makes some sense. And I'm going to turn this over to Yanka because, you know, first off, we need to let Yanka say I told you so, because Yanka was firm on the side of Teddy needing to get in there and play this season regardless of what was going on, for all the reasons that were just outlined, so that we can kind of see what we have going into the offseason. So we need to let Yanka have his opportunity to do that. But I also want Yanka to kind of speak to something that you've been talking about a little bit. We got into it, you know, on the last pod, in terms of kind of what we need to do at quarterback going forward. And so I want you to give me another opportunity to kind of get into your take a little bit about, you know, Teddy versus Case versus Sam, if he's healthy, and kind of what your thoughts are on all that, and you know, the best way for us to proceed, and you know, some of the passions that I guess exist on all now three sides of this this quarterback carousel that we have going on in Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I told anybody so, because there's obviously no way to predict Teddy's health. We didn't know he was going to be, you know, kind of have this miraculous recovery. You know, I'm happy for it. He's been one of the players that I've I knew as soon as I saw him in Louisville. I love this guy. He joined my team, so it made me love him even more. But that being said, it's great that he can get onto the field. I do want to dispel some, you know, some of the narratives that are around him about him not playing football for 2 years. Now let's understand that, like, Teddy's been out of football for about 14-15 months. I know math is hard, but that's only a little over a year. That hasn't been 2 years. So I mean, the last time we saw him play is last year in August, you know, during that preseason game. But, you know, it hasn't been 2 years. It's only been a year of him out of football. And even within that, I think it's important to know, like, Teddy hasn't forgotten how to play football, right? You getting a major knee injury hasn't forgotten how to play football. Now, does that affect his psyche, his confidence on, you know, if I scramble outside the pocket or if I cut in a certain way? Yeah, that might affect, just overall psyche. And that does play a role into how he might operate. But with that being said, a great game to get Teddy inside. And you could start him, or you could just, like, wait till it's the game is out of reach and just put him in there, like Miles has been saying, and let him go. Now, with help from Jason, I know that we kind of looked at, I know last week I was really kind of critical as far as Case versus, you know, other things, and I kind of put the take out, hey, like, I really think Teddy should play in this game. So Jason, you know, you helped us out earlier today, and you kind of just broke down some of the stats between them. As we look at the stats between all three quarterbacks, if you look at passer rating, Teddy leads that between the two. You look at completion percentage, Teddy leads between the two of them. Yards per attempt, Teddy leads between all three of them. Touchdown percentage, Sam is a little bit ahead Teddy, and then you have your average net yards per attempt, which actually Case is slightly ahead of Teddy Bridgewater in that respect. So for me, it's gonna boil down to Case Keenum really hasn't had a significant statistical game since Tampa Bay. And, you know, that's not really saying very much, considering Tampa Bay is not that great of a football team, or at least defensively. So I'm looking to start to, you know, knock the rust is the term that's been coined for getting him in. But really, I think Teddy has been, I think it's been reported that he's been a really big part of the game plan, the playbook, all the other stuff. Now it's just been the chemistry on the field, and I'm sure he's been getting that with practices off the field. So this is definitely a game that I would love to have Teddy get in and really reestablish himself as the starter for this team. Because let's be honest, everyone who said, like, well, Sam's the starter, we traded for Sam because our starter was originally down. So, in my opinion, I think Sam's done for the rest of the season. So you really have to look at who the starter is. And I'm not waiting until Case Keenum plays bad. I'm trying to upgrade that position as quick as I can. And I think that's Teddy.
All right. Well, you got that take off your chest, and just in time, because it looks like our guest has joined us. Jordan Zerm, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing all right. Thanks for joining us. And guess we'll get you started, get things kicked off with some easy stuff here, just to really get you eased into things. And I guess tell us a little bit about yourself, where we can find your work. And your Twitter profile says you're a sandwich enthusiast. So I guess we also need to know what your favorite sandwich would be.
Oh man, that's a really good question. I will let me brainstorm on that while I kind of rattle off what I do, so I can make sure I get my correct sandwich to take out in the open. I currently work for ESPN Cleveland, which is an affiliate. Like I'm not popping in on SportsCenter every now and then. We're a local affiliate. It's mostly a radio station, but do some writing, do some producing, and we'll be doing some on-air stuff there. But for the past kind of 5 years before that, I wrote for a national kind of sports and fitness publication that was called Stack. But got to do some super cool stuff there in terms of spending time with athletes and back in February, I got to hang out with Patrick Mahomes for a few days while he was training for the draft. So it was stuff like that was really cool. And then I freelance from places like Bleacher Report and Complex and a paper here that's called Cleveland Scene. And a lot of kind of everything as kind of the digital sports media world kind of continues to transform, trying to keep up with everything. And let me see, my favorite sandwich. Yeah, it's such like a, there's a place here in Cleveland, a local spot in the community where I grew up, that's called Grums, and it opened in like 1970, and they haven't changed the storefront at all. So like it's like you walking into the past when you go in there. And I get a sandwich called the Hot Grumster, and it's like roast beef and horseradish and onions and cheese and just a bunch of other delicious things going on with that. So that's probably my I'm probably going with that for my favorite sandwich.
Well, that sounds delicious. And you mentioned, obviously, we're talking to you because of the Browns. And I guess, are you a Browns fan?
Yeah, I am.
How did this happen? And how often do you fantasize about leaving them?
A lot. Every night I have a dream and I wake up and I'm like, should I do it this time? Like, should I actually do it? It's one of those things where, like, growing up in Cleveland, it's just kind of something that's like very much ingrained in you from your, like with me, it was my dad for a lot of kids. My age, I think it was kind of like their dads or whoever in the family. It's that weird cliche thing of like, you're just kind of like born into that fandom, and it just kind of like as much as you hate it, and as many like horrible Sundays as I've had in my lifetime, which has been like most Sundays that they play, you just kind of like, it would feel weird to root for another team and to like just be totally done with them. It's like a disease, man. It is. It's like you just keep coming back and watching them every Sunday, and at like 10 a.m. on Sunday mornings, you're like, you know what? I feel good about this week. I feel optimistic. There's like a 2-hour window where you feel optimistic and then kickoff happens and you're like, why did I do that? Like, of course this was what was going to happen. So I will say that I, you know, didn't have a choice kind of growing up, because that's what, you know, my dad would watch games and I'd watch him with him. And then it kind of just gets ingrained in you and I can't really get rid of it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Definitely makes a lot of sense. And we're all Vikings fans here, so I mean, we understand what suffering is all about.
Yes.
So,
and we can commiserate together.
Yes, indeed. So I want to pass it over to my man JR here, because I guess he wanted to know what it's like a little bit being a Cleveland sports fan, and I'm sure he's going to tie this back to his man LeBron in some way. So JR, pass it over to you.
Yeah, man. Jordan, just thanks once again for coming on, man.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me, man.
No problem. I've been to Cleveland once in my life. It was back in 2002, I believe it was. I went to the McDonald's All-American game back when it was called the Gund Arena. Do you remember? I'm sure you remember that.
Yeah, all blue seats.
That's the only time I've ever been to Cleveland. But just the one question I wanted to ask you was, just give us some insight into this whole Hugh Jackson, Deshaun Kizer situation that's going on right now. I know it's been a debacle for the most part, but you're much closer to it than we are. So just give us some insight into exactly what's going on with that situation.
Yeah, it's really it's probably the most frustrating. There's a lot to be frustrated about in terms of where the Browns are right now. But I think that to me is like the most is the most frustrating thing of any of it. It's obvious that Kizer is – struggled and is having a tough year, and is not really improving on things that you would hope that by week 7 or 8 he would kind of be starting to get and starting to be better at. But I was at the game when they played the Jets when Jackson pulled him at halftime. They were down 3-0. He had made 2 terrible red zone turnovers. One was an audible call where he decided that he was going to run kind of this little speed option with Isaiah Crowell, and he threw a horrible pitch that was way too far out in front of Crowell, and it was a fumble. And then he threw another interception on a ball he just should have never have thrown. It was a rollout, and he was trying to hit his tight end, who was like the only option on the play. And so, like, I get it. Like, those are, you can't turn the ball over in the red zone, and those were crucial and huge buzzkills. So, but then, you know, you look at like who else is on the roster as a quarterback, and you've got Kevin Hogan and Cody Kessler, and it's like, what? So you're turning the offense over to one of these two guys who, you know, like, Kaiser's been bad, but you're not going to get anything better from, we know what those two guys are. We know what kind of quarterbacks they are. And so I was frustrated after that game, but like, part of me was like, okay, you know, like, he had those 2 bad interception or 2 bad turnovers. He wanted to just try something. I wasn't like, I was mad, but I wasn't like getting too worked up about it. But the doing it for a second time last week, to me was just, it was a panic move, and he was done this before. He did this last season, in a game against the Baltimore Ravens. And I'm going to blank exactly on the specifics, but he, or what court it was, but Cody Kessler was playing, and Cody Kessler, I think, threw an interception, or the offense was struggling, and he pulled him for, I believe it was Josh McCown at the time. And it's just one of those things where it's like, out of nowhere too. And it's like, what are we doing? Especially when your backup quarterback is somebody like Josh McCown, or this year when it's somebody like Cody Kessler or Kevin Hogan. And so the second time that he pulled him, it's like, you are going to destroy this kid's confidence. And his confidence is already pretty shot from just from being a Browns quarterback. But when he did it last week, again, they were down 3 points. And again, I get it. He's making red zone turnovers, but you just, like, the alternative is, it's just like, what's the point? And this guy was a second round pick, and just go with it for this year, because they're 0-7 and it doesn't really matter. So just go with it. So it's been frustrating, to say the least.
Yeah. And with that, obviously there's been the frustration, and you have Kaiser, he's not playing particularly well. And then obviously, cause the Browns are the Browns, and you know, it's an easy narrative for the national media to kind of point out that the Browns are 0-7 and look at them, they're not doing well. Are the criticisms that the Browns are getting for passing on Wentz and Watson that we're kind of getting now, do you see those as being fair, or can you, you know, kind of see the perspective or the point of view from of the Browns front office and what they were trying to do there?
Yeah, it's definitely that's a complex conversation for sure. Like, with Watson, I like Watson a lot, and I'm kind of thrilled that, like, Bill O'Brien is using him and running that offense in a super creative way, where it's kind of playing to his strengths and doing a lot of the same things he flourished at Clemson. But I would not be, I'm not at the point where I'm like, man, I wish they would have just taken him at 12. Like, just cause I would like to see more. And because I think they, from some things I've heard here, I think the Browns really liked Patrick Mahomes, and that's the guy that they were kind of targeting. And when the Chiefs moved up to grab him at, it was either pick 10 or pick 11. I forget exactly which one, but when the Chiefs jumped up to grab him before the Browns pick, I think that's what made them trade out of the number 12 spot. So the Watson thing to me is not, I'm not ready to kind of pounce on them for that yet. The Wentz thing is interesting, because I, for a long time, I was a self-admitted Wentz hater. Like, I thought that his rookie year, that the kind of praise that Carson Wentz was getting was kind of absurd, especially the way people were throwing out all-time great quarterbacks' names when they talked about him. Because after his first 3 games with the Eagles, where he played pretty well, he kind of regressed. And I thought he did a lot of things as a quarterback that would worry me. Like, he got really panicky when there was pressure on him in the pocket. He couldn't really throw the ball deep accurately last year. So, you know, it was interesting, because for a while I was like, it looks like, between how Goff is playing, and Goff was reportedly the guy that he was most interested in, and how Wentz played last year, even though a lot of people tended to give him more praise than I thought he deserved, I was like, you know what? I think I'm okay with them passing on both these guys. Wentz has obviously taken it to another level this season. Like, his development from year one to year two has been pretty spectacular. And watching that game on Monday night was not enjoyable for many people in Cleveland, because he's always going to be tied back to being the quarterback that the Browns passed on. So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying I think the Wentz criticisms are definitely fair, because they were, and there was that whole thing of them squirting the water bottle like on the football because they wanted to see if he could throw the ball like in quote-unquote Cleveland weather, I guess. So there was that whole thing. And so they were definitely interested in him. I don't know if that was a Sashi Brown thing where the front office decided to move out of the pick, and if he wanted Wentz a lot or not, I don't know. But I think that the criticism for Wentz is definitely fair because of how well he's playing. And had you taken him, regardless of the lack of talent that the Browns kind of have on offense right now, I still think you're going to be in a way better position than quarterbacks last year. And right now they're starting Kaiser than yanking him at any sign of trouble. So I think the Wentz criticisms this year are starting to be pretty fair.
Yeah. Hey, Jordan, that was all really great insight. This is Miles here. Nice to meet you. Appreciate having you on the pod.
Thanks
just a
for
quick
having
question
me.
For you based off, you know, since you're in the heart of everything and, you know, you're under year two with Hugh.
Yes.
I know that everything you guys are under like a full entire rebuild. And it's like a crazy rebuild. Like one I haven't seen in like sports in a while. How overall do you think everything is going? And do you think, you know, even though you guys are 0-7 right now, do you guys, you know, do you see kind of like an upward trend in terms of the near future in the next, you know, few years?
Yeah, I think that's the hardest part. I'm usually more of an optimistic guy, like just in terms of general life and sports and stuff like that. And I've been on board with this like massive rebuild from the beginning, because for most of my life, since I, you know, when the Browns came back in 99, I probably was still a tiny bit too young, but you know, by 2001, I was pretty much watching every game on Sunday. And they've done this thing a lot of years where they've not really had a good team, but they've, whether it's because of poor drafting or they've signed veterans for, you know, too much money that aren't really going to help you get over the hump in terms of making the playoffs. Kenny Britt and Dwayne Bowe before him. And I
oh,
mean,
man, yeah,
the list goes, I mean, they've done it a lot, like the list goes on. And, so I was kind of thrilled when last year Sashi and Paul DePodesta and all the guys were like, we're just going to legitimately tear this thing down to the bare bones. We're not going to try to like sugarcoat what we're doing. We may not use the word tanking in public interviews, but like everything else we talk about is going to hint at like, we just need to completely rip down everything that's here. And the Browns have been so bad that it's like, oh, I'm fine with that. Like, let's just start over, try to build from nothing, try to hit on some draft picks and just move forward. And I didn't even really mind like the signing of RG3 just as a guy to like play quarterback for year one of the rebuild, because they signed him for pretty cheap. And if he didn't work out, as he did not, you can just kind of part ways with him after the season. I think that the Browns defense and where their defense is, I think they're on a really good path, especially on the defensive line. And the defense has been sort of overshadowed by how bad the offense has been. And obviously they're 0-7. So it's not like the defense has been this top five defense that is like kind of blowing up the league. But when Myles Garrett is healthy, I've watched Emmanuel Agba, their other defensive end, make really big strides this year, especially against the run. Like I think he only has a couple sacks this season, but he's playing like very well against the run. Danny Shelton, I think, is better than a lot of people think. And they also drafted this guy, Larry Ogunjobi out of Charlotte, who has one of the, I think if you look at Pro Football Focus, now he's not playing every snap, but I think he's one of the highest rated kind of interior defensive linemen against the run. So their defensive line has been good. Myles Garrett obviously hasn't been able to stay healthy, but I'm excited about like where that young core is going to go. A couple gems at corner in Brian Body Calhoun and even Jamar Taylor, who I think have both played pretty decently. And I like Jabril Peppers a lot. I spent some time with him. He was in the same group working out as Patrick Mahomes. So I spent some time with them before the draft, and Jabril is just like this ball of energy, great leader, like super athletic, can do a lot of different stuff. And the Browns are just wasting his rookie year because
What are they doing? What is Greg Williams doing with him?
I don't know. I don't think the Greg Williams thing is a whole nother conversation, because I think of anything he has played one of the biggest roles in how poorly this Browns team has performed, and the Jabril Peppers that far back, and basically making him either he's going to be kind of in coverage or he's just going to be like running downhill at a guy who's already like at full speed and full like head of momentum and apparently going to be the one last dude who's going to try to tackle him, is just not playing to his skill set. And it's not what he did at Michigan. And he was bad in coverage at Michigan. So I don't really like understand why they drafted him if this is how Greg was going to use him. But I think he's talented. And so whether I don't know if Hugh's going to survive the year, and if he doesn't, obviously Greg Williams won't survive either. But I'm over Greg Williams already, and we're barely halfway through the season, so that's definitely another combo. But I think there's some pieces on defense that get me really excited for where the that side of the ball can go. But the offensive side of the ball, it's tough. I mean, losing Corey Coleman again to a broken hand has completely decimated their receiving core, and the guys around them, including the aforementioned Kenny Britt, you know, they're playing with a bunch of guys that one of them would maybe be the third receiver on a team. And I'm talking about like Ricardo Lewis and Rashard Higgins, and they're signing dudes off the practice squad like Kaysen Williams and Bryce Treggs. And so like one of those guys maybe would be a third starting receiver on a team. And the Browns are playing all of them because they don't have any other options. So it's just really tough to do anything when that's kind of your receiving core. So they have not really addressed the wide receiver position through the draft besides Corey Coleman. And then they took a bunch of those guys in that first draft in the later rounds. And
then nothing with Sammy Coates.
I don't know what they've played Sammy Coates like four snaps. So I don't really know what's going on with that.
Oh my God. I completely forgot he played for them.
Yeah. He got traded to them. And he just sits on the sideline. I've literally watched him just like,
He dresses. He'll like come in. He'll play like a couple special team snaps, and then they'll send him on a go route like once. and it's like, okay. And Isaiah Crowell's been disappointing. And they refuse to. I mean, there's a lot. They refuse to give Duke Johnson, who's the best player on offense, like the amount of touches that a team with a lack of talent should be giving their best player. So I mean, there's a lot of things happening that frustrate me on the offensive end. So I think that side of the ball is definitely starting to worry me, but I do think that their ineptitude, I guess, kind of overshadows the pretty good young talent I think they have on the defensive side of the ball.
Hey, Jordan, it's Prince. I just had to ask you, like, what are the, you know,
hold on. His name is Yanka. Don't let him fool you. His name's not Prince. His name is Yanka. We just call him Prince.
I mean, I can call you Prince if you want. I don't know. You know?
A lot of people don't like. They don't know. Like, Prince is actually one of my middle names, so that's why they, you know, that's why I use it as my Twitter handle as well. So I'll just use it sometime.
All right, I'm here for it.
What do you feel like are the keys to the game for the, you know, between the Browns and the Vikings?
The Browns have really struggled to get like pressure on the opposing quarterback. And I think I tweeted this a couple of days ago, I think, but I think like the Browns through week five had like the highest blitz percentage in the entire league, and it wasn't close. And they like barely get there. It's on like 25% of their snaps. They send pressure, they actually get there. With Myles Garrett out, that takes away a big part of that. Their defensive line doesn't really have the same bite with him out of there, because then you're playing Carl Nassib, who's kind of just like a dude. And then you've like Agba is the only one really who has a threat of kind of getting after the quarterback. So some pressure would be great. Here's the question. Wait, so who is starting for the Vikings at quarterback on Sunday?
They haven't named one yet.
I mean, it's Case Keenum.
It's Case Keenum. Yeah. Case
Keenum. Okay. All right. So, I mean, like, yeah, if you can put somebody like Case Keenum under pressure, you would think that you could force him into a fair amount of mistakes. The Browns have been really good against the run this year. That's like the one thing they've done well. So, you know, if they can kind of keep Jerick McKinnon and company from big runs and allowing them to kind of get the running game going and kind of make Case Keenum throw and they can get some pressure on him, I think that will go a long way. Cause I really think with how bad the Browns offense is that it's got to be on the defense to create turnovers or put back the offense up so that when they punt, the Browns are not like backed up at their five. Cause that's basically just like, here, you might as well just have the ball. Like, this possession's not going to go anywhere. And yeah, on offense, I mean, it's really as simple as, like, DeShone Kizer. One, don't pull him. I don't care if he throws, like, 10 interceptions. Just don't pull him. Don't do that again. And two, it's just, like, don't turn the ball over in the red zone, which is, like, all Kizer has done. So I realize that's a pretty hefty request at this point. But, man, they have been in positions to put themselves back in a game or take a lead or whatever it is. And they turn the ball over inside the 20. And it's devastating to the team. You can just see it. And then I would just love, like I mentioned before, like they just don't use Duke Johnson enough. I would have him on the field, like almost every snap, whether he's lining up as a running back. They used him in the slot a bunch in week one against the Steelers, which like to date is their best game that they've played. And they have not put Duke Johnson back in the slot since. He's always running routes out of the backfield, but even just handing it off, like they're so stubborn in their ways. Like they just keep force feeding Isaiah Crowell the ball. And he doesn't have the vision or the explosiveness that Duke Johnson does. A lot of people here just don't really understand why they kind of refuse to have their best playmaker out on the field for more than 50% of the snaps on offense. So I feel like those are the main things that the Browns will have to. It's a lot because they need a lot to go their way to beat a very good team like the Vikings. So they're going to have to do a lot well, but those are all kind of like would be a good starting point for them to have any chance of winning this game.
Yeah, and you just touched on something that I guess, you know, you're here, you're close to the team, so I figure we'll ask you this because we had a bit of a conversation about it, you know, on Twitter and then on our last podcast. But, you know, Hugh Jackson, Ashi Brown, they came in and they kind of, you know, tore it down, stripped it to the studs, and then started the rebuild. And so no one really had the expectations of the Browns winning anything in these first couple of seasons. How does that play with the team? Because you just mentioned they had a couple opportunities where they, you know, could have won a game or could have turned a game around. And then there's that red zone turnover that really like deflates the whole team. Like, how does that play when, I mean, I guess in their head, the players know that they're part of a team that's rebuilding and isn't supposed to win, but there's still a bunch of really competitive guys out there who want to win every week, I'm sure. How do you balance that with the long-term vision that I'm sure the GM's working towards and that short-term that seems to be now making Hugh make some rash decisions with Kizer?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really great question because I think it nails how hard doing something like this is in the NFL because the NFL is supposed to be the easiest league in terms of like turning your team around. And it usually works for everybody except the Cleveland Browns who have not been able to figure out how to go from a bad season into slowly turning your team around in 1 to 2 years. But like that's how the NFL is set up. So when you ask, there's like a very big divide here between people who and kind of give this regime at least a third year to see how their plan and another, they have a ton of picks in this year's draft again. So there's people on that side. And then there's people who are already like, I can't do this anymore. Like you can't go 1-22 or whatever it is under Hugh Jackson and continue to keep their job. And I've only been in the Browns locker room once this season after a game. I covered their first game against the Steelers. I'm like, they played pretty well. Like, the season looked like it may be very different than what it eventually turned out to be. But so the locker room wasn't like super quiet or down or anything like that. So I haven't been back to the locker room since, but I've heard things from colleagues who have been in the locker room. And like last weekend, I guess Kenny Britt just kind of like walked out before the media even came in. Like he wasn't going to talk to anybody. And like stuff like that, I think can wear on a team. And like, I feel there's players that I feel really bad for, like Christian Kirksey, who's like a very good linebacker and has been with the Browns for a while. I actually think he's the longest tenured Brown right now. And he's been in the league for a little while. And then you look at a guy like Jason McCourty, who's actually like having an incredible season at cornerback, and it's all like doesn't really matter because they're 0-7. And he's a veteran. He's been in this league for a while. And you feel bad for the guys that are playing well. And that's, you know, like Joe Thomas for his entire career. And like, injuries suck, but a part of me is just like almost relieved that he got hurt, that because now he can figure out whether he wants to even keep playing or if he is just like, I can't do this anymore. Like, please send me somewhere where I can win. And I think the team would oblige him if they did. So I think it's hard for those guys. Like, I can't imagine being, especially someone like Joe Thomas, and it doesn't look like it ever bothers him that much, which is crazy to me. Like, he hides it well, but if I were a veteran on this team, even if I knew what the plan was here, I think especially that's why it's been so tough that they haven't been able to get even like one or two wins yet, because I think even a couple of wins right now and people would be willing to be like, yeah, absolutely, we're going to give it a third year. And even the players would at least like have seen their efforts turn into an actual win. Like, it's really hard when you play a great game for not even great, but a decent game for, you know, 75% of a game, and something happens and you still lose. And then it turns into this thing where it's like, yeah, of course we're going to lose this game because we've found ways to lose over and over and over again. So it's a great question, because I think there's a divide between media, there's a divide between fans, and I bet you there's a divide between players who are like, I'm not really trying to wait around for another year, another 2 years. And I'm damn sure not trying to go 0-16. We just went 1-15 last year. So I think it's hard, man. I think it's hard to do something like this in the NFL. And that's why the Browns are catching a ton of heat for it right now, because it's something that like doesn't really ever get done. So it's a great question. I would love to get an honest answer from a lot of the guys in the locker room about kind of how they feel about this whole plan.
Well, thank you for the insight, and thank you for everything. I know we talked to you about it, what seems to be everything but the game, until we got right down there towards the end. But it's a ton of stuff. You know, Cleveland is, it's fascinating following the Browns. I know that, you know, on Twitter especially, the Browns picked up a large following when they brought in, you know, Sashi and Hugh, and decided to kind of, you know, moneyball it up, and the analytics community was cheering for them. So it is fun kind of, you know, following what's going on with Cleveland. But you know, before we get you out of here, we have a couple things we need you to do. We need a bold prediction for this game, and then your score prediction, which, of course, we won't hold you to.
Appreciate that. Let's see. My bold prediction is that – now, see, I did this before. I almost was going to be like, Kenny Britt's going to have three catches or four catches. And I actually said that before a game earlier. I think it was the Indy game, and he had, like, two. And I was like, this is stupid. I'm not doing this. let me see what else I can come here with a bold prediction. Let me just say one of the wide receivers is going to catch a touchdown, which is Rashard. Crazy to think that that's Rashard. Like, all right, I'll go with Rashard Higgins.
Yes, that's going to catch a touchdown. That's my guy.
And what's the score prediction?
All right. Score prediction. I'm going to go with, I don't think it's going to be close. Like, I think it's going to be like 30-13 Minnesota. Okay, that's what I'm going with.
Yeah, we'll take that. We'll take that. And then I'm really the last thing
with here two is, touchdowns.
Miles, you're pushing it now. You're pushing it. And then really before we actually get you out of here, I guess, what upcoming projects do you have that we should be on the lookout for? And since, you know, your Twitter bio lists a whole bunch of places, you got to let us know where we need to go to find that article.
Okay, cool. I will. So actually the main thing I'm working on right now, it's a Cleveland story. It's about it's a local football team here, and their quarterback / defensive back from last season, like one of their best players, actually got killed in a drive-by shooting over the summer. And so I've actually spent the year with this high school football team, kind of just hanging out and reporting and talking to players and coaches and stuff like that about like what it's like to have to play a football season after like something horrible like that happening. So that's going to be coming out in November. That's for Cleveland Scene, which is kind of like a magazine / newspaper here, which I'm excited about. I've never done a like in-depth kind of reported piece to the extent that this is. So I'm excited about that. I'm also going to be doing a thing with where I sit down with the one, the only Booby Gibson, former Cleveland Cavalier, and do a little Where Are You Now with him. But I don't like know what else he's doing. So that's going to be with something called Cleveland Magazine. So you can find those two things in those areas, those publications in November. And then, I'm always doing freelance stuff for Bleacher Report. So stuff is out there. And then, ESPN Cleveland, ESPNCleveland.com. You can kind of find an assortment of things, whether it's podcasts or some written stuff over there as well. So those are the main places that I'm at.
Well, that is definitely awesome. Definitely going to be on the lookout for those. Just wanted to say thank you very much for coming on the Climb in the Pocket podcast. You were awesome. Guys, you got anything else for them before we get them out of here?
Yeah, 20 seconds, man. Taco Boy, former Gopher alum, Brian Body Calhoun, a.k.a. BBC.
So I missed the first part. Were you just saying, like, my thoughts?
Yeah, just a little blurb. He's coming back to town, so I'm just curious.
Oh, that's awesome. I actually think he's awesome. Like, he's been really good this season, and last week he was a beast. Like, he broke up a couple they tried to throw a couple quick, like, wide receiver screens, and he read them both times and just, like, blasted the wide receiver and broke up a pass. So BBC is actually one of my favorite defensive players. So he all good things over here.
All right, appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
JR, Miles?
Nah, I ain't got anything. Thanks for coming on, man. You were great. Yeah,
appreciate having you on.
Of course. And I'm like, weirdly excited to get up at, like, 9 a.m. to, like, watch a football game. So that'll be, like, a weird
same
thing.
Here.
But I'm awesome. Ready for it. Yeah.
Well, thanks, man. Have a good night.
All right, man. Thank you, guys.
Well, all right. That was an awesome interview there with Jordan Zerm. And, you know, Yinka was spitting some hot fire right before Jordan came on there about, you know, Teddy, Case, Sam, kind of his thoughts for the future and all that. But with Jordan coming in, we jumped right into his interview. So I still need to come back to JR and Miles, because I never got y'all score predictions or bold predictions for this game. I mean, it seems unanimous that everyone thinks the Vikings are going to go in here and roll the Cleveland Browns. But I still need to get your
thoughts.
JR is
still going
to
go against the Vikings. JR is going to pick Cleveland.
I mean, that, you know, brand. we'll start with you, JR. What are your thoughts on how this game is going to go?
I got a Vikings 24-6. Bold prediction. I think the Vikings get 8 sacks in this game.
And the 6, is it field goals or is it a touchdown and a missed extra point?
2 field goals.
8 sacks.
Okay. All right.
Oh, I thought you said 8 sacks.
You definitely said 8 sacks.
three safeties.
And so while we're talking about the 8 sacks, give us your scouting report on Spencer Drango.
He's a guy I wasn't a big fan of coming from that, you know, spread concept at Baylor. It's really hard to develop offensive linemen with the offense that they run with the offense that they run because their passing game is so quick. So their offensive linemen truly aren't getting tested because the ball is out so quick. And, you know, they're throwing the ball at least 40 times a game. So you rarely ever got to see him run blocking as well. So, and he just had really, really heavy feet. That was like the biggest knock on him. He was like a lumberer. That's what a lot of scouts like to call a lineman that don't have very fast feet. He just lumbered around. So I think it's going to be very hard on him on Sunday if they do start him at left tackle. Do I expect them to? I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly who they're going to have fill in for Joe Thomas, but if it is.
Oh, no, it's him.
Yeah, I think he's going to have a long day going against Everson Griffin unless they chip block him every single play, but that's probably impossible just because of the sets that they want to run. So I think he's going to have a long day.
Well, all right then. Wide receiver one, Miles Gorham. What is your score prediction? What is your bold prediction?
Score prediction 27-10. And I'm going to say Vikings, 27-10 Vikings.
Thank you for clarifying.
bold prediction. I think Teddy Bridgewater plays, and I think we'll say he scores a touchdown too.
Okay, who?
God damn it, Miles!
Is it on the ground? Who's he throwing it to? Give us some details, man. Fill it in.
He's throwing it to Kyle Rudolph.
Okay, all right, yeah, that would make some sense. I mean, I'm already blocked, so you know, I might as well be honest now.
Hey, but and then the second Teddy steps on the field, I know people have said it before, but he's gonna win comeback player of the year. So.
Okay. All right. Giving us bold predictions for the future. I like it. Saxy Prince, since I feel like you're upset that Miles just took your bold prediction of Teddy Bridgewater playing in the game, what is your bold prediction?
Not just playing, number two, but
and scoring.
Not just playing. But yeah, but I had Teddy Bridgewater coming into the game and putting up two touchdowns, y'all. It's going to be crazy.
Lord have mercy.
Okay. Well, Miles used that one already, so you need to come up with another one.
However, the other one, go ahead.
You're about to like this man's about to put 300 yards and
right.
No. Two touchdowns? They ain't difficult. But anyways,
what
I think for this game,
Jarius Wright gonna have 200 receiving yards.
Two touchdowns? That ain't difficult, y'all. That ain't difficult. But I think my score prediction is probably gonna be around 35 to 10, and my bold prediction is, now that it can't be the Teddy one, I think each of the Vikings wide receivers, well, just the top three, I'll say Diggs, Rudy, I'll say Diggs, Thielen, Rudy, and Treadwell all get a touchdown in this game.
Wrong.
See, I don't know which one you're saying is going to be wrong. I feel like you're leaning
all of them, really. I called that a Rudy touchdown, so you can't take that one.
How can you call both Teddy and Rudy?
Because
I feel like this is like earlier today when, you know, I put my lineup in, and then Prince just went in and switched one thing with the extra dollar. I feel that's what Prince did with your bold prediction. He just took yours and then added one touchdown.
We had a different team though, right?
No, we had the exact same team. You just put Antonio Brown in for AJ Green. Because I left a dollar on the table. Yeah.
Oh no! I don't think. I think I saw Miles, and then I started doing mine. I posted.
All right, my bold prediction for this one: we finally have the game that Prince wants us to have. So Vikings are going to score 42. The Browns will get 10. That's my score prediction. 42.
All offense, or how is this gonna work?
Hey, come on now.
You gotta explain.
We're playing Deshaun Kizer, man. No, the defense is gonna score a couple. Once again, we're gonna have a couple scores that don't come from the offense, but we're putting up 42 in this game, and Browns are only gonna get 10. And let's see here, Trey Waynes is gonna score a touchdown, and Anthony Barr is going to score a touchdown.
Good God.
That was my bold prediction.
Jason, is that you?
That is me. You know, the defense is scoring too.
Has everyone on the defense scoring a touchdown.
Okay,
so.
It's two people. I said there are going to be two defensive scores.
Trey Waynes? Trey Waynes?
They don't throw at Xavier. So, I mean, he's the most likely to have something bounce off somebody else and land in his hand.
Hey, at least Anthony Barr has a scoop and score. So.
Yeah, yep. So that's where I'm at with it. So I really feel like we don't need to do the next piece. You know, what's upcoming? We're going to go ahead and get this Saxy Prince Teddy article out there for you guys probably tomorrow or over the weekend. Just a couple minor edits to be done, and then we'll get that out there for y'all. I guess JR, I know you'd mentioned the mock. When is that? Is that tomorrow? Is that Monday? When should we be on the lookout for that?
I haven't decided yet. I still got some things that I want to work out and some certain picks that I do want certain teams to have. So it's probably going to be next Friday, a mid-season.
And is this a full, like a full first round, or is this Vikings only?
Full first round.
Oh, boy. All right, all right, all right. It's Miles. I know you're still working on that article for us, pulling together your draft favorites. Anything else we need to be on the lookout for, or just that? All right, then. And you know, now you maybe, you know, you are rapidly becoming light-skinned Prince, just so you know, because he finished his article. So now I can't clown him for that anymore.
I know.
Hey, man, it ain't easy being this lovable. So you embrace it, Miles.
Prince is single and always seems to have free time on his hands.
Dude, this is also
I really don't. So,
well, all right. I really got nothing else. Thank you for listening to us babble and run on, talk about all this foolishness with the Cleveland Browns. Bright and early Sunday morning, Vikings Browns. Tune in, watch. We'll be there Sunday to give our recap after the game. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Climb in the Pocket podcast. I'm Jason Brown here with JR Miles and the Saxy Prince. We will talk to you soon.